Hello, and welcome to a free preview of Greatest of All Talk. Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Greatest of All Talk. I'm Andrew Sharp, and on the other line, Ben Golliver. What's up, man?
Not too much, Andrew. I could tell the goats have been thinking. Just looking at these questions, they're in ponder mode. You know, they're really in deep think mode. We got awards questions. We got state of the game questions. We've got do you go bankrupt sports gambling questions. It's just all over the place. I'm not sure where they're finding so much time to put so much thought and energy into these discussions, but I love it. Maybe they're still waiting for the shot clock to get fixed in the Lakers game. I'm not sure, but I was blown away today by the GOAT's just range of queries. So let's just dig into it. Let's hop into it. No preface whatsoever. Give them the stage, man.
Yes, we are going to be bouncing all over the place. However, there will be a preface. I'm going to begin the show by reading from Wikipedia, Ben. The parable of the prodigal son is one of the parables of Jesus. It is found only in the Gospel of Luke. The parable is about a son who wastes his share of his father's estate. He loses all his money and gets work feeding pigs, one of the lowest jobs a person can do, according to the Jewish religion. He repents and returns to his father's house. He is welcomed and a feast is held. His older, dutiful brother, who has worked without reward for his father, resents the fuss made over the prodigal son. His father reminds him that all he has is his. He says they should still celebrate the return of the younger boy because he has come back to them. In the Western Catholic Church, this parable is usually read on the third Sunday of Lent. Now, Ben, you may say to yourself, why are we starting with a lesson in Scripture? And wasn't the third Sunday of Lent actually a couple of weeks ago? The answer to the second question is yes, it was March 3rd. The first question, though, I'll tell you why we're here. It's because out there in the audience, there is a sheep who wandered from the flock, and I want that sheep to know that he is forgiven. And to start the show, I want to extend a warm embrace to Jacob the Rockets fan and tell him that he is welcome to return to the house of Jalen Green whenever he chooses. He left our house. He debased himself by apologizing to you, admitting that he was wrong. That was him feeding the pigs. But there's still plenty of time for him to repent and come on home and celebrate the month that Jalen Green is having for our Houston Rockets right now.
Yeah, imagine if they can sneak into the Western Conference play-in mix as the ultimate spoilers. I have to rebook all of my play-in travel plans. It's going to be a disaster, Andrew. Yeah, this does feel like an all-time March heater from new father Jalen Green. Alpi Sengun is out of the way. Lots of shots and touches open up.
Pretty phenomenal layup.
The other night that he made. But when you were talking about, you know, someone feeding pigs and getting around in the muck and the younger brother who doesn't have his head on straight, I thought you were referring to our dynamic, you know, the older brother who needs to hold things down with the dad and the younger brother grease pig just out there mucking it up. So you had me going lots of different directions. Glad it's not about you. It is hilarious, though, that the moment Jalen Green's career has seemingly turned around was the precise moment.
Literally within like a day or two. It's great.
That Jacob folded. So, look, hats off to Jalen Green. I do think we are seeing a few different cases around the league of some real March stats. You know, we get these late season pushes that get people excited. I would put him into that category in all sincerity. But it's better than what he was doing in January. So congratulations to him. And Jacob, I actually wouldn't do a U-turn here because he's probably going to get himself traded off of this run. That could be the best thing to happen for Houston because it's clearly not a fit there in terms of their core. So stay out on Jalen Green, celebrate his trade, move forward, let Andrew, you know, buy season tickets to watch Jalen Green and Jordan Poole in D.C. next season.
Oh my God, I'm ready to let the light into my life. Yes, 26.6 points per game for Jalen Green in the month of March, 50% from two, 40% from three, 6 rebounds per game. That's guard
and they're
rebounding.
Winning.
Yes.
That's, and the crazy part is they're winning.
2 in their last 10, 6 game winning streak. Just one question. You're the full-time NBA journalist, so you probably spend more time with the NBA rule book. Do you think the NBA would allow Jalen to finish the season playing in one of those big white chef's hats, and so he just cooks for the rest of the season?
Oh, that doesn't sound legal, Andrew. It doesn't sound funny either. Sounds pretty corny, like something I would say. Congratulations, so I appreciate the attempt. Actually, the attempt was so bad you did make me laugh, so good job. I feel like hats off to you as well. Chef hat off
hats
to you.
Hats off to me and hats on to Jalen. Yes, I have no idea how much stock to put into anything Jalen Green is doing, but to your point, it's one of those March trends that tends to pop up every year, and
well,
it's one of my
guy,
favorite stray subplots right now.
The other guy who's doing it's DeAndre Ayton with the Blazers. You know,
yes,
he's
a great example.
opening his heart to the local media, saying, "Look, I sucked for the first 3 months because I was sleeping on an air mattress after I moved to Portland." You know, starting to really up those double double numbers and fooling some people. We do see this every single year. You just got to be you got to be on guard. You got to be cautious. Keep that head on a swivel, Andrew.
Indeed. And my enduring faith in Jalen Green was rewarded because he won me the regular season title in my fantasy basketball league over the last couple of weeks. So shout out to him. But Ben, this was not a completely illogical place to start, because speaking of late season explosions, we got a question about Mikal Bridges. And Greg says this. He says, "I want to preface this by saying that I am not one of those all or nothing, you're a superstar or bum dopes from Twitter. It goes without saying that role players are essential to any good team. That said, is it irresponsible or even malpractice to covet a guy with a somewhat limited skill set the way the Nets have coveted Mikal Bridges over the past year? We're talking about a team that's going nowhere, with a considerable picks deficit, turning down multiple very valuable first-round picks, including their own picks back from Houston, all to keep a guy who has no chance to ever be even the second-best player on a legitimately serious team. I'm obviously not saying that Mikal Bridges is bad or not valuable, but is there any way to justify this line of thinking, or are the Nets internally regretting not selling high when they had their chance?" So, Ben, what do you think about the way Brooklyn has played the Mikal Bridges situation?
Well, I wouldn't call it irresponsible. I wouldn't call it malpractice. And I don't even necessarily think there's regret, at least regarding Mikal Bridges. Look, he is the safe rebound relationship after an incredibly toxic marriage to superstars that completely blew up in your face, right? Regardless of whether Mikal Bridges is one of the biggest disappointments, and I actually have some names from the top 100 from the start of the year that I'd like to read you later in terms of some of the biggest disappointments in the top 50, because he's certainly on that list for me. You know what you're getting. You're getting a guy who can go to the elementary school and read those children's books with the kids and be a good community ambassador, right? You're getting a guy who's going to play every single night. You're getting a guy who you can put on the cover of your media guide and not be afraid there's going to be an international incident because of something he tweets, right? And that's where they're coming from. So to me, it's a little bit maybe of an overcorrection philosophically from the Nets. They're saying, look, we tried to swim in the deep water. It did not work out. We drowned. So now we're coming back to the shallow end. We're going to keep this real easy, not spicy. You know, this is like when you order, you know, like curry from a takeout restaurant and you set it to 0 on the scale of 1 to 5, right? There's no spiciness whatsoever. We're just going to be bland and simple and just try not to be a disgrace for a couple years.
That's the thing. The safe rebound relationship can sometimes suck in its own way, in a different way than the crazy relationship sucked. So you have to be very careful with what you're committing to.
100%. And what I'm saying here is it's not love between Mikal Bridges and the Nets. This is just a, you know, a temporary, we've got to pull our lives back together. We need to split rent, okay? Like, Kyrie and Katie and Harden left
utilities,
them,
yeah.
Yes, left them so hung out to dry, they can't support themselves, okay? So they've just got to have somebody else come in there and split those bills. Now, I think it's important, too, that a lot of times when there's bluster around, oh, we wouldn't trade him for 4 picks, we wouldn't trade him for 5 picks, like, don't take that stuff so seriously. Like, you got to see through some of this posturing online and just realize the Nets know they're in a state of transition. They haven't really figured out whether they're coming or going. They're really handicapped by the Ben Simmons contract because it's gigantic. It's sitting on their books. And even if they wanted to go for it, because they're paying him so much money, they don't have the ability to construct a true winning roster, even if they made 2 or 3 or 4 really good moves last summer or at the deadline. They're just stuck. Like, they've wasted that money. So to a certain degree, they're trying to play out the clock on that one as well. So if we fast forward 3 years, something tells me they're probably going to no longer be together. And that's okay, because like I said, it's not love. I think that, you know, in terms of judging Bridges himself, he's definitely not a bum, right? But Greg hit it very well in his email to say that, like, he's basically a prototypical third option. There was the chance over these last 12 months to see if he could blossom into more, just to see if he had enough of the other stuff,
right,
that he could take a step forward. And the answer was a pretty emphatic no. And there is some benefit from at least trying that. I don't think it was a completely wasted season for Brooklyn, even though it was no fun and pretty ugly and unsightly. And you had to trade all these guys. You had to change coaches. You had to do all this stuff because it didn't work. But you did get a better sense of exactly who Mikal Bridges is, and I think that will inform how they move going forward into the next couple of years. I also think it's time for them to just be done with Sean Marks. I don't know how you stand on that one, but it really feels to me like he's one of these executives who's skilled at managing up, and he just has the owner's ear,
yeah.
And he just, you know, he can kind of sense what the owner's looking for and make it happen. I don't know if he has a true philosophy. It was supposed to be development. Then it was supposed to be superstars. Now it's something in between. They have not had a good culture in Brooklyn as a team. Even when they were winning in 2021, you know, that was not a good culture, you know. And certainly after that, it completely eroded, changed coach multiple times. If I had as much money as Nets ownership, I would invest real money to start fresh from the executive side.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think, as far as the way they handled this particular situation, I agree with you that as a calculated risk, it made sense to give Mikal Bridges a year and just sort of see whether he does have star potential and let him blossom, give him the keys. Turns out they gave him the keys and then Cam Thomas took the keys and has been driving the Nets to mediocrity and like 11th or 12th place for the last 4 or 5 months.
Like,
and
Grand Theft Auto style, five stars at all times.
Yeah, just freewheeling his way all over the place up there. But as far as Bridges, I mean, I, going back to last year, was skeptical. Like, I've watched a lot of Mikal Bridges, and I didn't really see that in him. And so there was like the 2 or 3 months when every NBA podcast was talking about the Dame Lillard situation for like 45 minutes of each episode they released. And they would invariably land on the Nets as a possibility and say, oh, well, Mikal Bridges is off limits. Mikal Bridges is obviously off limits because he's on a good deal, 4 years, $90 million. And people were looking at him as a potential perennial all-star. And I just never really saw that in his future. And so this season isn't all that surprising to me. And to Greg's point, if they were having people beating down their door trying to give them a bunch of valuable picks for Mikal Bridges, I would have listened. It didn't seem like the Nets wanted to do that, and they wanted to see what he could bring to the table. Again, a reasonable choice. In retrospect, probably the wrong choice. But he'll still have value as a high-level role player to a good team and potentially the type of guy that a team trading a star would want to get back in a deal. I mean, like, if in fact Donovan Mitchell is like just pathologically obsessed with getting to New York, however he can, the Knicks are no longer an option. And so the Nets can put Mikal Bridges on the table, and Mikal Bridges and a couple picks is far better than Cleveland's going to do if they trade Donovan Mitchell to Miami, for instance.
He's a great return centerpiece, and we know that because he was the return centerpiece for KD, right? Like, it just makes a lot of sense. Bridges plus picks adds up to a really good way to grease those skids. Have you ever heard of the candy room at the Barclays Center? Have you heard of this concept?
No.
So it's one of these like super, it's in the, you know, back corner of the hallway, and only the most, illustrious season ticket holders and celebrities have access to it. And you walk in and it's literally like a movie theater. You know how they have like the wall of candy, like any kind of candy you could want, but it's like expanded to being like, I don't even know, like 20 feet wide, 10 feet tall. It's like a bar of candy, right? So it always struck me as super weird that that was their big appeal to like these high-end clientele people that they're trying to get to go to Nets games in Brooklyn. Of course, they have like fancy fine dining restaurants and all this other stuff too, but they really are proud of this candy room, right? And like that candy's not going to eat itself. Like you have to have something in a market to convince people to ever come to games, right? And like there is more pressure in Brooklyn to just try to pretend that Bridges is a star versus there would be in other markets, right? Like in Charlotte, it's like, all right, well, you know, we're not trying to really build this whole thing around him because, you know, who are we kidding? Like no one's showing up anyways. But in Brooklyn, you're trying to charge crazy prices. You're hoping celebrities show up. You want to be a scene. You want to at least save some face after they gouged everybody during the KD and Kyrie era, right? So that's the value that Bridges brings from a business standpoint. And I think that's the real reason why he was quote unquote untouchable, is because if you sell him for picks and parts, then you really are the Cam Thomas show. People are not going to spend $5,000 for a box of Red Vines and Cam Thomas. I can promise you that. Like that candy room is getting tumbleweeds, right? So that's where it gets to be a little bit tricky.
Yeah, it is really tricky. There's no question about it. And for the Nets, he was essentially just a placeholder. I think that makes sense. I do think that there were people in the league who were like, oh, Mikal Bridges, like there's some real upside there. That might have been the steal of the KD trade. Like if we rewound to July last year, there were a lot of people who were very in on this guy.
No, and I was going to say that I am more optimistic on Bridges, or I was last summer, than it sounds like you were. I thought he could have a real chance to win Most Improved Player this year. I did think he had a chance to become an all-star, especially in the Eastern Conference, just from a scaling volume standpoint. It's like there's not that much talent over there. If we give you the ball a little bit more, you continue to be like an all-defensive level guy. Like I kind of just thought he would sneak in to like the 10th or 11th or 12th spot. And the fact that he was not really a factor in those conversations at all is what brings me back to thinking he was one of the biggest disappointments in the league. I mean, I was so high on him. I had him 23 on the top 100 because part of the argument is that he can work everywhere, right? Yeah. And he is a rare two-way wing. And what we've learned is that he has a dog in terms of a competitive desire to play every single night, but he doesn't have the pit bull in him. You know, he doesn't have the alpha, you know, whatever you want to call it, the wolf pack dog. He doesn't have that in him, you know, like he doesn't have the Iditarod dog in him. That's not really quite who he is. And so you could roll the ball out and say, hey, man, it's your team. And he's looking around and saying, well, can someone pass to me, or can I pass to someone else? Or I'm really not trying to be out here with 35 usage. And that was a harder ceiling than I expected, because when he first got to Brooklyn, he was making pretty good use of those extra touches, and he was really efficient doing it. So there will be a correction on his value, obviously, on next year's top 100. Do you have anything else you want to talk about with the Nets or Bridges, or can I list just a couple of these other names who I think in hindsight wound up getting overrated? And we don't have to spend a ton of time on it, but it is an interesting group.
So no, the only other thought I have on Bridges is that he's a particular archetype of player that's really difficult to value, because he does have a ton of value as a role player. And I understand why the Nets saw him as a potential star, but the guy he reminded me of is Troy Murphy in New Orleans, because Troy Murphy has really been on a tear lately. He was hurt to start the year. He's always been a big team sharp guy, and he's just shooting the crap out of the ball for the Pelicans. He's currently making $3.5 million, and he'll hit restricted free agency after next season. I would say he's a better offensive player than Bridges, and not as good defensively. But I'll be very curious to see what kind of deal he gets whenever he hits restricted free agency, because he's the type of guy that other teams could talk themselves into. He has a lot of value to the Pelicans. But if he were like the guy, the option, or the second option even for a team, maybe there are more limits there. I think that's what we're seeing with Bridges, is there are limits in terms of what you're going to get if he's your primary creator or even secondary creator. He's just not really that guy. And again, Troy Murphy might actually have more upside than that, but it just remains to be seen. And it's just a particular conundrum with that type of role player, the potential two-way guy who fits in really well in any situation, but how much does it scale if you're going to start talking about paying someone like that $100 million, $120, $130, $140 million? Like, it gets very tricky for teams. So that was the only other thing that came to mind.
I mean, especially for New Orleans, where they're not really known for breaking the bank, and they already have a bunch of big salaries on the books in terms of Zion, B.I., and C.J. McCollum. So it does feel like if you're going to keep Murphy, and I think he should be a really high priority for the reasons you described, I think it's a very fair comparison between him and Bridges. Something's going to have to go, and that would probably be C.J. McCollum, but then you're going to have to try to trade him, and that might not be easy. So they're going to have some things to sort out there for sure. I do think he would generate a lot of interest around the league as a restricted free agent. So I do think his number will come in, and it'll make people double take and say, well, what has he really done? You know, like, I get that he's this cool prototype, but he was injured. Like, let's see the body of work. But the other nice part for him is that he's going to be coming off of a season where the Pelicans beat the Clippers in the first round of the playoffs. And so he's going to be saying, hey, you know, it's time to pay me. I'm putting that marker down right now. If that's the matchup and it's on track to be that matchup, I think the Pelicans are going to take care of him, because they're a horrible matchup for the Clippers inside. Zion putting all that pressure on the rim. That Clippers defense is just waiting to fold, and nobody can fold them faster than big-bodied Zion. I cannot wait. I really do hope that that's the first-round matchup between those two teams. I think it would be fascinating. In terms of some of these other disappointments, another player who's kind of in this same mold, different style player, Siakam. I had him 18. The whole argument is, like, let's get him to a place where he could be the number two guy. It's not going so perfectly in Indiana. You know, I don't know. We can't blame Siakam for stealing Halliburton's jump shot, but I do feel like he's come back to earth a little bit reputationally this season. Bridges at 23, John Morant at 24, obviously biggest disappointment in the NBA. I was curious about this one. Trey at 28. I feel like I've been lower than most people on Trey. Does this season force even more correction, right? Like, do we have to come even further back on Trey?
That's a tough one. 28 is pretty low. I am as low, if not lower, on Trae Young than you are. I would say, yeah, you probably do have to bump him down to the 30s at least. But he was still putting up numbers in Atlanta. It's honestly, it's like the exact same Trae Young arguments people have been having forever. Right. It's like, oh, well, when you look at his numbers, you can't put all the failure on him. Like, individually, he's been great. And we've had Hawks fans emailing saying he's been more committed defensively and has bought in more this year than he was in past years. So I don't want to penalize him too much for having, like, the life-threatening wrist surgery that prompted all the photos from the hospital and everything and shut down his season. I don't want to penalize him too much for that. But I think when he was playing, 28 might have been a tad high, but that's definitely the tier he's in, the sub-all-star tier, but still very good.
Yeah, and then, but you look at it, every additional year where the argument falls flat that, like, oh, you know, he's this great player, everything else is failing. Well, when does he ever show it? You know, it's like we've now got 4 or 5 years of this building up. That tends to make me correct on people in a very similar way as to Bridges, where it's like, well, the first year of you trying to be the guy was such a bad flop, we have to dock you. You know, two guys from Cleveland we've mentioned, Garland at 37, Mobley at 39. Based solely on this year, you know, they did not hit that one. I don't know how much I'll drop them, though, because there is a case for those two guys each like just the year from heck, right? Like yeah. what the heck? Like this was not who they were supposed to be. Heck,
yeah.
Well, but Garland, I don't know. What do you think on those two?
I would say with Garland, he is starting to regain his form. He's still a little bit all over the place. Like there are great nights where you're like, all right, this is the Darius Garland we watched last year. And then he wasn't quite as impressive in the Pacers Cavs game that I watched earlier this week. I will say, though, what jumped out at me most from that Pacers-Cavs game was Tyrese Haliburton, man. It's not just like a fluke that he's not shooting well. He can't really create space very well right now, and I don't know whether it's the injury or what's going on, but he just doesn't look like the guy that we were watching in November and December, and I would be concerned if I were a Pacers fan, which... sounds like a shitty thing to say because this is sort of like the house money season that was supposed to just be the cutest story in the world. Everyone's having fun, no expectations. But Tyrese Haliburton over the last month or so, the numbers are atrocious and the numbers match the eye test as I watched that Cavs game.
It's got to level out. It's yeah. got to level out, right?
Because but he's not getting good shots for himself. That's the thing.
I hear you. Not only was it the house money season, though, it was this has gone so well, we're now going all in with Pascal, you know?
Yeah.
Like, so the correction, the timing of this correction on Halliburton's play is like the worst case scenario. Like, you thought you had the superstar building block, and now he shoots 1-for-9 from three every single night. And you're saying, what has happened to this guy? I think it's got to level out. There's just no way he's this bad. And maybe he wasn't quite as good as he was at the start of the season, but the truth will be somewhere in between by the time he's healthy starting next season. And I do feel like, you know, that's got to be playing a part here when you have such a drastic shift in terms of how a guy performs and shoots.
Yeah. Well, and then Pascal. So the Pacers trade for him. I understand why they traded for him. And it seemed as though there was some sort of unspoken understanding that they're going to give him a max deal this summer. I wouldn't be excited about giving him a max deal after the way the last couple months have gone. I mean, like that Cavs game, Pascal's just sort of out there. He's good. He's not great. And the idea of paying him $200 million would drive me insane, but maybe the Pacers don't have any better options to spend that money on. But still, pretty underwhelming, all things considered. And, you know, the Pacers are not really scaring anybody this season, and I'm not sure how that changes if they're relying on Pascal Siakam as the second option. He definitely belongs on the disappointment list.
Yeah, no question. And the last three guys here for the 40s group, and they're all, I think, to me, just massive, massive disappointments. So I was trying to split the difference between awesome Wiggins in the 22 finals and horrible Wiggins because he was out for like 2 or 3 months last year. So I put Wiggins at 40 thinking, hey, this was going to be a bounce back year for him. He's not even close to the top 100, maybe not even the top 200 this year. Mm. So you got to ask questions. What does his future look like in Golden State? Zach LaVine at 42, I'm trying to think, should I just leave him off of next year's list? Do I have the guts to do that? like, especially with your guy, Coby White, just blowing up, like, in the immediate aftermath of LaVine's disappearance, plus the contract, everything else. I don't know. He's hard-headed for a sharp correction. And then I think a guy who has a case to be almost as disappointing as Ja Morant, and maybe one of the biggest disappointments in the entire NBA this year, LaMelo Ball at 43. He's another one where, sort of like with Trey, like how many years do we wait through ankle injuries? Not that Trey's had the health stuff, it's just like the style of his game. But if LaMelo can't stay healthy, he's not impacting wins necessarily as much as we would hope when he's on the court. You have to build everything around him. He's the lead ball handler. He's, you know, he's always got the rock. The team has to be made in his mold. He's never going to be this major plus defender. He can't be counted on. It goes back to my whole thing, like if it walks like a duck, quacks like a duck, is it really a duck? I don't think this guy's a star, right? So at this point, that means he's got to be dropped a lot, I think, next year. And there was already fights among the intelligentsia at the start of the year about, like, is LaMelo just completely a fraud? And this year has, you know, fraud alerts going off left and right, you know. Ringer, ringer, fraud alert, like, It's just in every direction.
The fraud watch is over. We came, we saw, and he is a fraud.
And I want to be like fair to him, but I don't even know what are you doing to defend LaMelo other than saying he hasn't been able to show it because he's been injured. I think that's like the only thing you can say.
Man, I feel like, I guess I was on vacation in August when you were putting this list together. I could have saved you from a couple of these mistakes. I would have had LaMelo in the 70s before this season. I think that's where he belongs more generally. LaVine, I guess I understand why you had to put him in the 40s, but man, he did not look good last year. Another guy, the Bulls, I guess, felt like they had to pay him, but like you could tell that the injuries were catching up with him and he wasn't the same guy athletically. I have no idea what happened with the surgery that he got to sort of shut him down that came after months of trade requests that went unrequited. And then it was sort of like, I get the sense that Clutch made a call and was like, all right, you need surgery and we're just going to shut this down and revisit things this summer. I don't know. Yeah. All right, and that is the end of the free preview. If you'd like to hear the rest of this episode and get two episodes every week from me, Andrew Sharp, and Ben Golliver, you can go to greatestofalltalk.com and subscribe to the show.